Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
And that you would be on May 18th.
A beautiful May 18th.
Yeah, I guess it's going to be the cooler of the final days of spring.
That's right.
Because tomorrow, it's supposed to be in the 90s tomorrow.
That's right.
Is that right?
I believe that is correct.
But of course, when you live at Malibu, which you do, who cares?
I live there, but I'm never there, man. I tell you, I'm out on those freeways all the time. And as you said, it is May 18th, and of course, things are starting to heat up here in Southern California, Michael.
They are. And speaking of hot, 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 let's say a quick hello to the guests on this edition of State of the Arts. He is the star of Blake Sings Barbara, the concert. She is a star of stage and screen, and we're going to welcome them both, Blake McIver and Susie McIver Ewing.
Yeah. Welcome both.
Thank you so much.
What a coincidence that you have the same last name.
I just imagine.
We tried so hard to book it that way. It is great to have a mother and son team here today, and obviously we're going to talk to you more in just a little bit here. But before we do that, we want to take a quick moment here, Michael, and I'm dying to know what was going on in your busy week.
Oh, my busy week. You know, it really wasn't busy with anything constructive.
Well, that was a short segment. Great job. Well done.
You know, I'm currently representing Oklahoma.
Of
the musical.
Oh, not the state.
Excuse me.
Pardon? I thought you were selling land in Oklahoma.
No.
Musical's much more interesting. Well done.
No, the 3D Theatricals production of it, which
sure.
We're getting ready to open on June 16th.
Yeah.
At the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center through the 25th of June. And then we go over to the beautiful Cerritos Center for the Performing Arts and open there on the 30th and play through July 9th.
Yeah.
And it is a reimagined production. Probably more so than some of the others that have been along the way since the revival,
Can you give us any hints to what people will see?
It's a very diverse, racially diverse cast.
Cool.
Which is pretty great. And there are 53 people in this production.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's huge, huge.
That's as many as went to the land rush in Oklahoma. That's pretty impressive.
Pretty much what the difference is going to be, at least what I'm told by my clients, are that they're really digging into the text of the characters and their personalities and their persona.
Sure.
And because, you know, in that time period in 1904, when 1904, 1906, when Oklahoma was waiting to become a state,
yeah.
Two women living in the middle of a prairie couldn't be these women.
Yeah, to be a tough broad, no
lead,
doubt about
you know,
that. Yeah.
Couldn't be really represented so beautifully as she is in the original production, always in beautiful dresses. And I mean, they're in the middle, they're plowing, they've got one ranch hand.
You're right.
So they're getting into that kind of thing. And with, you know, the lay of the land, the law of the land.
Yeah.
And trying to develop more realistic characters that people today can connect with, because we're in a very confused world today,
yeah.
Just as it was back then. So,
well, those are scary times back then too. That was the outlaw West. I mean,
you
farmers
bet.
And cowboys were killing over that land.
And Indians,
so, yeah, that's absolutely
Indian territory
right.
As well,
that's
so,
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, that sounds great. And obviously, that's 3D Theatricals, who always does an amazing job
yes,
on their productions. So we encourage our listeners to go find out more about that.
Yes, you do indeed.
And obviously, Michael, we've had a lot of fun things going on here. Personally, I had the chance last week to go see the amazing Davis Gaines.
Yes,
Man of La Mancha. I got to be honest, I met Davis, and he was almost too nice. He was here and a friend of the show, and he's certainly too good-looking, so I was kind of hoping he'd fall flat on his face so I could feel good about my career. But no, he stepped up there, and man, I mean, obviously his voice is just iconic.
So
his acting chops were so superb, and of course the Valley Performing Arts Center really does a good job of presenting shows, musical theater shows, in a way that you just love sitting there and watching what's going on stage. It's not an ordeal to get there. Thor, the artistic director there, the one who manages it there, is doing
Thor
such
Steingraber.
A friend of the show as well, of course, and I talked to him just briefly, and you can tell they're all so charismatic because they love what they're doing. If our listeners have a chance, get out out to the Valley Performing Arts Center, focus on their season, but check out some of their special events, and certainly look at this production of Man of La Mancha, which will go to La Mirada next, I believe, right?
Yes, it will open in La Mirada early summer, and will be there for, I believe, 3 to 4 weeks.
It's a show not to be missed. What a great show that is.
So. And he's a very multi-talented performer. People don't really, I think when it comes to acting, they don't really necessarily equate that, because his vocal prowess from Phantom of the Opera, which is what gained him so much fame, you know, was all sung. So.
Yeah, it really was surprising to see how veteran of an actor he is. He just carried that entire show. The rest of the cast was great, but he just walked through it so effortlessly. Yeah. You really enjoyed the journey that he took
you
on.
Good for you.
So,
we always have a great time out there at the Valley Performing Arts Center. So, should we thank our sponsors?
We should definitely do that.
We didn't. What about you?
Well, that was my week. I went to go see one show, and then I took a nap for the rest of the week.
That was it?
It was nice.
Oh, okay.
I had a very busy week, but it was a fun week, and it was lots of stuff
running
around.
First, I have to ask this. What did you do for your wife's on Mother's Day? Because
was it Mother's Day this? Oh, no.
Yeah.
That door's going to be locked when I get home.
Last week, you were in serious concern of getting a reservation somewhere.
And you were very kind and recommended a couple places as well. In the end, I did the daddy go-to option. I said, hey,
I'm nervous.
I know, I was too. I said, we can either cook here, I'll cook for you, or I can go out and pick something up. I said, or if you want to, we can go out. And I thought for sure she was going to say, hey, let's go pick up food to go. There's no cleanup, and you know, nice and easy. That way I could get the kids out of the house. She could have a nice morning waking up. And she says, you know what? I'm feeling great. Everything, you know, it's nice weather. Let's get out. So we went to a very small breakfast cafe and had a great time. It was kind of the tons of people around there. It's where all the stars go to and all that. So Reggie Miller was there. All these basketball stars were there, celebrating mothers and all that sort of thing. And my wife kind of looked at me with my two kids and said, this is exactly what I wanted for Mother's Day. So we kind of hung out there and just took our time. She had 3 cups of coffee, which she never has time for. And if you know my wife, you know that that's the best part of her week, is a day where she can actually get more than 1 cup of coffee before running off to do all the mommy stuff. So we had a great time. And then we went out and finished our celebration, getting her gift and all that sort of thing. So
good for you.
Thank you for asking,
Absolutely.
Michael. It was a fun
She's
time.
She's a lovely lady.
Well, Mother's Day is such a fun holiday. So it's one of those ones that you really enjoy celebrating, and there's certainly a good reason for it. Those moms work hard out there, don't they?
Mm-hmm. They do.
And before, obviously, we get into the meat of the fantastic show that we have in store for you today, let's be sure, Michael, to thank our sponsors.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
We are indeed, and to Mike Napoli and his crew down there. They always make it so easy and support us every week with this show. So.
Truly great people down there.
Shall we get into this?
Let's do it. Let's bring this
an award-winning actor, singer, and songwriter. Our guest today has been seen on Full House, The Little Rascals, and Bravo's The People's Couch. In the vein of Rufus Wainwright singing the Judy Garland at Carnegie Hall concert, he has created a musical exploration and borderline insane fan tribute to Barbra Streisand.
Directed by Mary Lane Haskell, he takes the audience on a journey through his fandemonium of Barbra's first big comeback show, putting his own spin on the iconic songs and patter from the 1994 World Tour.
Yes, indeed. And he also shares the ups and downs of his own life as a junior Star Search winner, former child star, go-go boy, and an independent singer-songwriter, and even some hilarious therapy sessions, all relating to his Barbra quote-unquote problem. In 1994, as Barbra finally returned to the stage, his house collapsed in the Northridge earthquake here in California while he was shooting The Little Rascals, and a love affair was born.
Though best known for his extensive film and television work, he is no stranger to music and theater. From singing with greats like Natalie Cole, David Foster, Michael Jackson, and Barry Manilow, to his ovation-nominated performance in the U.S. premiere of the critically acclaimed musical Ragtime, our guest uses his multi-genre range to put his own unique spin on the music of Barbra.
He is currently bringing his acclaimed tribute show and love letter to the greatest star, Blake Sings Barbra, the concert back to the Cavern Club Theater tomorrow, May 19th, and Saturday, May 20th, before touring later this year. And we are thrilled to have him in studio with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, the talented, uber-talented Blake MacGyver. Hello, sir.
Thank you
Blake, that's all the time we have today, man. Your intro took up the whole show. What a life you've lived. You've been working since you were how old?
6 years old.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, 6 years old with Star Search.
I'm going to tell my little girl to get off her backside and get out there and make some money.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. You know, I saw a photo of you, your fascination with Barbra Streisand, as we've talked about here in your intro, a photo of you as a child with a pair of glasses, and then a photo of her Yentl. From Yentl with that same kind of pair of glasses.
Yes.
It, the irony of that.
Quite funny.
Yeah.
As soon as we saw that photo, I was like, oh, we gotta make a little graphic out of this. This is too good.
Boy, oh boy. And I so remember seeing Blake on Full House. Did you ever watch the show?
I loved the show. It was a great one. That was family night for us. We'd all sit around and watch that show, and then Family Matters, I think, that came on right after as well.
TGIF.
That's right.
No,
that's exactly. And
that's
it, I mean, it really was. It was appointment television. So. Yeah.
So your character's name, was it Danny?
Derek.
Derek. And he was kind of the sidekick to the Olsen twins.
Correct.
And the episode I remember the most, when I really took notice of you, was when you sang Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yes, my first appearance.
That was your first appearance.
Wow. It is the song that follows me like a plague.
In fact, he's going to sing a little bit now, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I talk about it in the show, because I talk about Barbra's love-hate relationship with Don't Rain on My Parade and how that
how funny.
Similar to my love-hate relationship with Yankee Doodle.
Wow.
Yeah, the 4th of July was a traumatic holiday in my life. Way too much pressure.
Well, we're going to book you now for the 4th this year and get you back
really?
On the show.
Get your booking in early.
That's right. Now, have they called you for Full House, the new version that's out?
No, actually, it's funny because I did have a conversation with Jeff Franklin, the creator of Full
House.
Sure. He left the show about 2 episodes before my first appearance.
Wow.
So he has no sort of connection.
You're not in his, yeah,
my
of course.
Character.
Right.
And he very point blank told me that. I have no connection to your character. I'm like, thank you. But, you know, we'll see. If the show continues to go on and there's a reason to.
Have you seen the show?
I have, yeah. No, it's adorable. And they completely.
I have not. I can't find it. Where is it?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Netflix. Yeah. I don't have Netflix. So. That would be why. Okay.
it's hard to find if you don't have Netflix.
I saw the gentleman who was the star, one of the 2 stars, John Stamos, not John, but the other
Dave Coulier.
No, not Dave.
Bob Saget.
Bob Saget. With John Stamos on an appearance on Jimmy Kimmel. They had 2 of them. And they appeared talking about Don Rickles because he had just passed.
Right.
And they were super close friends of his.
Yeah.
And what a great camaraderie that Bob and John still have.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
John just keeps going and going.
And he never ages.
Remarkable.
He always looks exactly
the same.
Yeah,
it's kind of not fair.
Right.
It's like, I want whatever those Greek jeans are. Like, I want some.
Yeah, you can't buy them at Macy's.
I wish
Greek
I
jeans.
Could.
That's right. Although now I think we've got a new target audience there. Greek jeans, come buy them and stay young. That's the way to do it.
He should have his own line. He should endorse
it's
it.
Great way to do it. Yeah. It's funny, too, when you look at that show lasted for quite a few years.
Yeah, it was like 8 or 9 seasons.
And
yeah.
I think everybody but the Olsen twins came back, right? All the principal characters are back for the new. I haven't seen it yet, but yeah.
So, Blake, at that young age, did you really even have any true perception of what you were getting into?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. No, I pushed for it. I knew when I was 2 that I wanted to be on Star Search. I was 2 and 3 years old. I would sit in front of the TV and be like, "Mommy, I want to be on." Like they, my.
That's true.
I had the anti stage parents, which was the best thing I could possibly, because they were both in the industry. So it wasn't. There was no, like, nobody was living vicariously through me. It was I had to prove to them that, yeah, no, I really want to be here.
Did you mind the stardom that came with being a child star? Was that a problem for you? Did you have to adjust to it?
Not really. The thing that I had to adjust to the most was I played all these, like, really snarky, precocious, you know, characters that, you know, you kind of love to hate. And so that was the only thing that was hard for me, was being a kid that kind of wanted to be liked,
right,
like most kids do. And I was kind of the point of many of my roles were to hate him.
Yeah.
That meant I was doing my job well. So that was a little weird.
Interesting. That can, especially when you're developing your own personality. It seems like you came through it well, though, and handled that, and then decided that it was okay to have that happen in the early ages, as long as you have parents
totally.
Who support you.
Yeah, no, and we've had our ups and downs, which I get into in the concert.
How personal is this concert? And again, the concert we're talking about is Blake Sings Barbra, the concert. And this is, it's going to tour, correct?
Yes, it
okay,
is.
Okay, so we're opening here coming up, and then we're going to tour the show. Tell me how personal this gets. Is it your own personal story, just
of
Barbra?
It's very much my own personal story during that period. 1994 was a completely dynamic year for me, so I explained to the audience why this concert meant so much and still means so much to me. So I 94, I went through it, even though I was nine. You know, I went through it. So sure. I kind of walk you through that and sort of comment on why her bits and patter and song choices affected me at different stages of that year.
Very interesting.
But what drew you to her in the first place?
Probably the first time I saw Funny Girl.
Yeah.
You know, I was seven, I think, when I saw Funny Girl for the first time. And there was something about that. And I talk about this in the show. It's that connectivity that she has between being able to infuse character and passion in a melody and a lyric equally. Mm-hmm. That I feel like it's just special when
sure.
she does it. It's extra special.
Hmm.
You know, a lot of people are great singers. A lot of people are great actors. A lot of people do them well together. There's something magical about when she does mm-hmm. them together. And that just spoke to me.
And just the very fact that when you're in her presence, even in a concert, you feel very special as an audience.
Absolutely.
Member.
She does that thing, and I studied the 94 concert even as a kid before I was doing solo shows, because I would talk with my mom about this. We would joke that every eyelash is choreographed, but yet,
wow.
when you're there, you feel like you were just in her living room just having a chat. Like, it is that weird sort of, she can make an arena feel like a 99-seat space.
Well, so I saw that year, too. I was there. And when she played Anaheim.
Anaheim.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Closing
yes.
weekend of the tour.
Yeah.
The
so
pond.
And it was a great, great evening.
Wow.
You know, there were like four of us. We went in a stretch limo. We did the whole thing and really made it quite
You did
evening.
It right.
Yeah. That's the way to
That's
do it.
That's what you did.
It was actually, I think it was my birthday, which is four.
Oh,
I think.
Perfect.
It was somebody's birthday if it wasn't mine.
Even better.
Yeah, exactly. Well, did you see Buyer and Seller?
Oh, yes.
And
many
did,
times.
What
I saw
did you
it here
think
with Michael Urie, and then I saw
yes.
it both in Laguna and Palm Springs, starring my boyfriend, Emerson Collins.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did it in both places.
Did
he
do
runs
it recently,
of that.
Don?
Recently in
Laguna.
Yeah. Yeah, their last season, last summer.
Interesting.
And then the year before that, he had done it in Palm Springs.
I am embarrassed to say that I had no idea he was an actor.
Wow.
Yes, yes.
I know that he's your cohort on the TV show, right?
Yes, no, a very wonderful actor. But yes, he did Buyer and Seller, two fantastically successful runs of it. And he and Michael Urie actually got close during the process. there's a little like club of Alex Moores around
of course,
the
Jay
country.
Rodriguez,
they,
of yeah, course,
yeah.
And
they all kind of know each other, and they're all kind of supportive of each other, which
That's
is really
funny.
Awesome.
That
but
is
yeah.
so cool. Well, good for him, and give him my best, and I apologize. Now I'm going to have to read up on him and go see these things when he's in the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Ladies and gentlemen, the show we are talking about today is Blake Sings Barbara, the concert, and this is going up. It's going to launch at the Cavern Club. Is that correct? May 19th and 20th?
That is, tomorrow night.
Wow, that's
and
amazing.
Saturday
yeah.
at 9 p.m.
And you took time to come see us while you got to be going crazy with rehearsals and tech and all that sort
well,
of thing.
Well, what's great so. Is I tried the show out last November, so that was the...
Where was that, at?
It was also at the Cavern Club. And now we've expanded upon it. We've added some things. We've worked out all the kinks, and now this is the definitive version that's like ready to take on the road.
Ready to rock and roll.
Yeah.
So it's more of a workshop at the beginning
it
part,
was,
and then you
yeah.
worked through that. How much change? Did a lot of it change?
Not too much. It really more expansion than change.
Because with such a personal project, I would assume that workshop, you've got to really have some good advice coming to you, because you got to be so attached to everything that's in there.
Absolutely, and yeah. that's why I enlisted Mary Lane Haskell to direct it, because she not only knows me so well, but her aesthetic theatrically is so keen that I knew that even these personal stories, she would still make them relatable to the audience. And, it, you know, I even joke in the show that this whole thing started with me like barking in front of the television, like singing along with the concert. And she like fine tuned it and made it an actual like, we make some choices and like, let's have some levels and some layers and like, let's make this an experience and a real journey for the audience.
An editorial eye is an important thing.
Yes.
Well, if you've never been to the Cavern Club, ladies and gentlemen, you must see this show as your first experience, because it's such a terrific environment, and it is encased in a beautiful restaurant, a rather historic restaurant called Casita del Campo, which has fine Mexican food, and it's a very colorful atmosphere there.
Absolutely. Extremely colorful.
And
like, literally and figuratively colorful.
Yes. And the theater is one level below the main dining room of the restaurant. So you can come there and have a great meal before, go down and see the show.
They dump your margaritas into a plastic cup, and you can take them into the theater.
I'm there. I'm ready to go.
There you go. It's so sweet. And tickets are ridiculously priced at
$20. What a great deal.
You can get those tickets at blakesingsbarbara.brownpapertickets.com. It's very easy to do. And there's an official website you can go to as well, BlakeMciver official.com. Blake McIver, M-C-I-V-E-R, official.com. Facebook, of course, he's there. And his Twitter is twitter.com/BlakeMciver.
That's right. And, of course, people can find out about a lot of your other work as well that we've talked about here in your intro. But you've been in the industry for so long, and you have such an interesting perspective on all this sort of thing. I wanted to ask, in your Barbara lifetime, since she came into your life and you started working on this show, has your perspective of the entertainment industry changed? Because I know Barbara has spoken very eloquently on how being so caught up in it during the 80s and 90s changed drastically in the 2000s as she kind of stepped away and looked at other parts of that and how people reacted to her. Have you seen some of that as well?
Oh, absolutely. I was kind of, when I entered the industry, it was sort of the last of the old way.
Right.
Everything was still pen and paper. Everything was hard copy pictures and resumes. Like it was just, I got in like just pre-internet.
Yeah.
And then when I sort of, so I lived the first part of my career like that. And then when I went away, went to college, by the time I got out of college, it was completely digitized. Everything was the internet.
I mean, within moments, really. It happened within so moments. Quickly.
Yeah, I mean, literally, right. Facebook started my freshman year of college. So
you weren't on MySpace?
I was on MySpace. Oh. I was on MySpace briefly, but funny enough, only to advertise shows.
Right. That's the dividing line, is people who had MySpace versus Facebook. I think that's a very clear generational dividing line.
It totally is. So when I re-entered the industry after college, I had to completely relearn everything.
Wow.
Like it was a total, I mean, I was went into my first agent meetings and they were like, so why did you go away? Like you're completely irrelevant.
Right.
Make yourself relevant again.
And you immediately broke into Yankee Doodle Dandy?
Yes, I did. Very angrily. It was very aggressive,
boy,
visceral
that guy's got
Yankee
angst.
Doodle.
Well, obviously, poor flag he was waving.
This is obviously a fun show, and who doesn't love Barbara's music? And I think your take on it is very refreshing, and certainly the personal aspect of what it meant to you is an engaging concept to see a concert on, so I'm excited to see it.
Thank you.
So tell us, too, about the Bravo series, The People's Couch.
Yes, we did 4 seasons of
The People's
Couch.
What's it called?
The People's Couch on Bravo.
They used to call my living room that in high school, just so everybody knows.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
You could sue.
That's right. Finally, some royalties coming in.
Yeah,
you know?
Get some intellectual property rights on that. No, it was a really fun social commentary series on Bravo where we would watch the sort of most notable and least notable TV of the week and comment on it. And it was 6 to 8 groups of people. I was on a couch with with Emerson, my boyfriend, and our best friend Scott, and we just would
Scott Nevins.
Literally, yes, Scott Nevins, and we would literally just say what we thought, and they filmed this. When this show was pitched to me, by the way, I thought it was the actual end of entertainment. I was like, okay, we have now reached the bottom. We are making a television show about quote unquote real people watching television. I'm like, I can't. I'm out. It's
the ultimate voyeuristic experience.
Like, and then I watched the first one, and it was like really cute. And the way that they edited it together, our story producers were really smart and really sort of it gave you a perspective on what America was thinking about various things, and it was really engaging. We actually got to like talk about really cool stuff, and in season 3 we got to cover the Normal Heart and like talk about AIDS on Bravo, which was amazing. Like so it really became much more than certainly than my jaded self thought.
But it was all confined to talking about television shows?
It was all television shows. Yeah. Okay. It was television shows, but we also covered like, you know, award shows and specialty things, and we did streaming shows, we did some Netflix stuff, some Amazon stuff, so.
And you know,
really cool.
Every season television seems to desperately be trying to top any other network that's been out there successfully. And, you know, I tuned in for the season of Riverdale, which is based on the Archie comic book characters. I think I talked about this
a little bit
last week. And, of course, the Archie comic book characters were delightful and funny and kooky and Jughead and, so many people
Veronica
that we related
and,
to
of course.
As younger and always having fun and doing things, stupid things,
right.
But always being cool.
Yeah.
Now, they are totally, have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
It's so dark.
It is dark. They are tortured teens.
Right. Yeah.
With so much angst.
Archie gone bad.
So much sexuality. Bless their hearts.
That young boy from that big Disney television series.
It's one of the kids from The Sweet Life.
The Sweet Life.
Zach
yes,
Cody,
he is now
right?
all yeah, grown up. Twins. And he actually, in fact, all of these kids are really quite good actors.
Yeah, they are. They assembled a great cast.
I mean, it's an interesting, you know, put together on these characters, but it makes me think, like, why did they even base it on the characters? It wouldn't have made any difference because it has
nothing to do with the comedy.
It's a marketing ploy. I'm sure that they wanted that little bit. Well, obviously, Blake Sings Barbara sounds great, and there's a lot more to talk to, but we are going to come back in just a moment and get to meet this wonderful and beautiful lady sitting next to you. But first, we're going to take a brief time and do a live arts calendar. So will you hang around with us for a minute?
Absolutely.
Thanks, Blake.
Right.
Jersey Boys is a Tony, Grammy, and Olivier-winning best musical about Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, the four seasons, the rise, the tough times, and the personal clashes, and the ultimate triumph of a group of friends whose music became symbolic of a generation.
Far from a mere tribute concert, though it does include numbers from the popular Four Seasons songbook, Jersey Boys gets to the heart of the relationships at the center of the group, with a special focus on frontman Frankie Valli, the small kid with the big falsetto.
In addition to following the quartet's coming of age as performers, the core of the show is how an allegiance to code of honor learned in the streets of their native New Jersey got them through a multitude of challenges. Gambling debts, mafia threats, what is this about my family? My goodness. Family disasters. Jersey Boys is a glimpse of the people behind the sound that managed to endure for over four decades in the hearts of the public.
Center Theater Group Downtown Los Angeles presents Jersey Boys now through June 24th at the Spectacular Amundsen Theater in Los Angeles. Don't miss this show and the show that the Chicago Tribune calls the most exciting musical Broadway has seen in years.
For tickets, visit centertheatergroup.org. That's theater with an R-E. For more information, you can call 213-972-4400. What a tremendous, tremendous show this is. Michael, obviously we have a personal connection to it, and it's one of the most entertaining shows out there. But this is, of course, just one of many great shows playing across the Southland this summer.
And our connection, of course, is John Lloyd Young, who originated the role of Frankie on Broadway and for which he won every single major theater award that year. And it was upon his debut on a Broadway stage.
Every time I see him, I ask him if I can have one. I mean, he's got so many of them.
No, he won't give them to you.
No, he won't. No, he's serious about that. John's one of our favorites, and his performance as Frankie Valli in that, and of course in the movie as well, was so heart-wrenchingly beautiful, and his voice just matches it to a T.
And it still soars beyond the rafters. And I must say that in this production, which has been touring, the young man that is now playing that role, Mark Ballas from Dancing with the Stars, has quite a different interpretation than John Lloyd Young ever did, but it's still worth the point of going to see this show, especially if you haven't seen it, because it truly is a fun evening. That music is so contagious. The audience goes nuts. And as you said, the story is the story is the story. And it's a very interesting side of the Jersey Boys.
And personally, a buddy of mine, Corey Greenan, who we've seen in If Then and other shows here, is in this production as well, and a great talent there. So,
well, here is another. Want to make $6 million the easy way?
Yes.
Okay, maybe not so easy. Flaherty and Aarons, the same Tony Award-winning writing team that brought us Ragtime and Once on This Island, has created a hilarious musical murder mystery farce, mixing diamonds, mistaken identities, and a body in a wheelchair. Oh, and puppies. In this all-singing, all-dancing, killer musical comedy, in fact, you'll die laughing.
The Actors Co-op brings us Lucky Stiff, running now through June 18th at the David Shaw Theater on campus of First Presbyterian Church of Hollywood. Performances are Friday and Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. and Sunday matinees at 2:30 p.m., with Saturday matinees scheduled for this Saturday, May 20th, and June 17th at 2:30 p.m.
And tickets are $34 for all performances, so right there in itself, we've got Blake McIver's beautiful show,
right.
$20.
Yeah.
Where do you think I'm going? I'm going to the $20 show to see my friend Blake. Yeah. Tickets are $34 for these performances, and senior student pricing is available. For more information about group rates or student rush tickets, call the box office at 323-462-8460.
Tickets may be purchased by phone, again, at 323-462-8460 or www.actorsco-op.org. Tickets at the box office can be purchased 45 minutes prior to the curtain.
And again, that is for Lucky Stiff, the musical that is running at the David Shaw Theater on the campus of the First Presbyterian Church of Hollywood. And as always, Andrew, we would like to encourage our listeners to visit performingartslive.com to find out more about these and many, many other shows.
It's truly a great resource, Michael, there at performingartslive.com, and obviously a fantastic way to find out the best shows playing this summer and all year round.
Absolutely. All right, so let's move on.
Time to bring some beauty into the show. Are you ready? We got some class coming this direction.
The bar of beauty has been raised in the studio by her very essence. As a choreographer, she has been associated with her longtime colleague, choreographer Joe Giamalva. Her most recent projects include Zoot Zoot Riot at the California Theater and the opening and closing of the 125th Tournament of Roses Parade. She recently returned to the stage with her friend, Mr. Giamalva, again, and another friend, James Gray, in the hit show Two Characters and the Gold Digger. Since 2015, both she and Mr. Giamalva have served as choreographers for the nation's only musical theater competition of its particular kind, LA's Next Great Stage Star, sponsored by Princess Cruises.
Obviously, later this month, she and Burt Reynolds will be special guest stars at the 40th anniversary of the hugely popular, almost cult film Smokey and the Bandit, starring Burt Reynolds and Sally Field, as well as our next guest.
We are so privileged to welcome this lovely and undeniably talented performer to the show. Please give her an incomparable welcome. Incomparable Susie Hot Pants MacIver Ewing. Oh, they
welcome,
remember.
Susie. Yes. I gotta tell you, I was looking at some of this Gold Digger stuff last night, and I was laughing and having such a good time. Really a fun group you worked with there, my goodness.
It was great fun, yeah.
Now, of course, you've worked with Frank Sinatra, Gene Kelly, Tony Bennett, Shirley Jones, Sammy Davis Jr., Barbara Streisand, mm-hmm. and, of course, Anne Margaret, among many, many others. You've traveled around the world, and you've done USO shows. What of all these amazing things you've done was your favorite? Now's your time to say State of the Arts with Andrew James and Michael.
Outside of that.
Very good.
Do you have a favorite, something that popped up?
Well, I always say, because I was a Gold Digger is the reason I got this opportunity, but it was going overseas with Bob Hope
wow.
and performing for our troops. That's truly the best.
That is tough to beat, isn't it?
Tough to beat.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. So when you did that, this was during the Vietnam War, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, 1968 through 1970.
You didn't just go to Vietnam for pleasure. This was for a purpose, right?
Can you imagine?
Bad time to travel to Vietnam.
I guess some people do.
Now well, they do. Now, it's
now,
very
now
beautiful.
Now it's
very
much
beautiful.
A vacation destination.
But I can't right. imagine it just because yeah. of the way I was there. You know,
that's a good point. It probably did
bullets,
change it.
You know, yeah. some bombs.
You have a unique connection to Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, don't you?
Well, yes, kind of.
Could you tell us a little bit about it?
In 1968, when I was hired, I went to audition for the Houston Music Theater for my second time there, and I didn't get hired. But the reason I didn't get hired is because the choreographer for the Dean Martin show was also the director of that show, and he called me and said, "Oh, Susie, can you come to the theater?" And I thought, "Oh dear, well, maybe somebody dropped out
right.
and I got
I've
in.
Got a chance."
But when I got there, he said, "Oh, no, I didn't hire you because I want you to go to L.A. And I want you to be in that new group, the Gold Diggers." I said, "Those girls I saw on TV last night?" He said, "That's the ones."
Wow.
And so a week later, I was here and I learned all of the act, and we opened for Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons at the Coconut Grove.
Wow.
Wow.
So if we take you to the Amundsen, would you get up there and do a rendition of that same performance before Jersey Boys coming up this weekend?
I don't
a solo
so.
Rendition.
Right. It'd be a lot of dancing parts you've got to cover. So.
It would be.
One of my favorite things that I've seen was you were involved with LA's Next Great Stage Star, which
yes.
I have a special place in my heart for, too. And you're working with some of the finest new talents in Los Angeles.
Yes.
That's
got
to be an exciting experience to pass that down from your time with
it's
the
wonderful.
All-time greats and then work with these young people.
It is so wonderful. I look forward to it. Now I've got to do it 3 years. I've loved it. And they're all special, and they stay special to me. I'm all on Facebook. Aren't I up to date? Facebook, and we're friends, and I keep up with their careers. And now they are all in shows, and literally we're going broke trying to go see all of them. because I'm so proud of them all.
Yeah, and well, if you try to go see Jordan Centeno, you will really go broke because he's in Australia.
That's working. Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you got a plane ticket, too.
Yes. And I would love to go.
Yeah, wouldn't we all? He just wrote me a note this morning,
oh,
actually.
That's great.
Told me all about his escapades down there. So
yeah,
good for you, Jordan.
We had a good group. We've always had good groups, but this year was exceptional.
So let's talk about the movie because,
okay,
I want to talk to you about Dean and all of that, too. Okay. But since this movie is very timely and 40th anniversary of
absolutely.
It. Now, is Sally Field going to be there?
Well, she can't because she's on Broadway doing Glass Menagerie.
It's closing, though. But it must be closing after the...
I think it's closing after.
After the day.
I feel like she would have come.
Right?
I,
yeah.
I really do. I mean, we were surprised that...
You know she's my old girlfriend, right?
You told me.
Yeah.
Confidentially.
I have pictures. I have everything.
Well, she's a sweetheart. We used to work out at Jane Fonda's workout club. She's very sweet. I never got to meet her on Smoking Gun.
She's so lovely. And, you know, we met on The Dating Game.
Did you really?
I was the first boy to ever pick a girl on that show. I did the pilot for
goodness.
Chuck Barris on that show. And it was her, a girl that I didn't know who she was, and another girl who I did know who was the double for Patty Duke on The Patty Duke Show.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was very hush-hush, and I had always had a huge crush on Sally Field, who didn't.
Yes, so
right.
And when the first question I asked her, I knew the sound of her voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I couldn't reveal or even look like I...
like you knew.
Yeah, I just couldn't because it would have ruined the whole thing. And I was shocked. I was astounded that it was happening. And yeah.
My husband, Bill, and I were both on... The Dating Game,
what?
Not at the same time.
Oh, really?
Funny. My boy, people went through that studio, that, didn't they?
Well, wow. You know, if you needed a quick buck.
Right,
know.
Yeah, that's a good job to have. You're right.
It was good.
How funny. So you were dating at the time and you were on different...
No, we didn't know each other at the time.
Blake, so, think how close it came to you not being happening, man. I'm telling you, brother. All it would have taken is one of those dates working out and everything goes to heck. So.
Right?
6 degrees.
It really
that's
is.
True. That's true. My
so
goodness.
Tell us about your character, Hot Pants.
Well... It's
because
so
we have hot lips.
Hot
I thought he was talking to me. This is so awkward. Oh my goodness! Calls me hot pants all the time off the air. So.
Calm down, boy.
The funny part about it is the fact that I even got the part because I was actually at a funeral. I was at Jack Cassidy's funeral. I had been in the nightclub act, Jack Cassidy and Shirley Jones. And I was at the funeral, and I went back to Shirley's house and called, at that time, my answering service. And they said, your agent called. You've got to go to Universal right now. Wow. I'm all in a black suit, and the name of the character is Hot Pants. So every hot girl in L.A.
Right.
was in that waiting room dressed like it, you can imagine. And here I am in a black suit. I went, well, clearly I'm not getting this role, but I'll go ahead and do my best. And, of course, it was my dad at the time had a CB radio in every car. So I knew the jargon, and I kind of knew. So I went in and read. I did the best I could, and it's the first time in my career before, then, or since that I got the job on the spot.
What, they gave it to you in the room?
Yes.
My goodness.
They said, you've got it. Report to work, you know, here this time and there. So, but the other part of it was the film, they had filmed this already in Georgia. That's the days when they sent film back to L.A. to be processed. It was ruined.
Oh, no.
They didn't have time. They'd already left the location. They didn't have time to redo it. So they called and said, just hire somebody in L.A. We'll shoot it there and we'll put it all together. So needless to say, I never even got to meet Burt Reynolds, even though all three of my scenes are with him on the radio, on the CB. So mind you, I got to the screening, casting crew screening, and I thought this movie was just stupid. I thought, whoa, this is not going to be good. It's just dumb. So I took my friend with me for the screening, and it started, and I started to laugh. I was laughing so hard, I completely forgot that I was in the movie until I heard my voice coming through the radio. And I went, oh, yeah, I'm in this.
Go home and check the mailbox for the checks just to make sure.
But it was great fun, but who knew it would be a cult movie, and it
How
truly
funny.
Is.
Yeah. It very much is.
And there is 100 black Trans Ams that belong to this group called the Bandit Run. They are starting on the 16th of June, and they are going from Texarkana, Texas, to Atlanta.
Oh, my goodness.
Where is where Bert and I will meet them in Atlanta for a question and answer before the screening, and then we'll screen the movie. And then the next day is a whole festival of pictures with the Black Trans Ams and autographs and everything. So I'm just, I can't even believe it. I was totally shocked. Oh,
my goodness. Hot pants back in action here. My goodness. Well, now, there's obviously a number of events going on right now, and Dean Martin's 100th birthday is coming up. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Well, and what an amazing performance he is. It's great.
He is, and he was just wonderful, and I was blessed to work with him. And they're going to have two events. I think there was another event in Palm Desert that Craig Martin, one of his sons, did a couple of months ago. And then there's one in Steubenville, where he was born and raised. And that is in, let's see, I think it's on the 16th of June.
Okay.
And then on the same weekend that I'm doing the Smokey and the Bandit, wouldn't you know, they're doing a tribute to him in Vegas.
Wow.
And Dina is doing it, Dina, his daughter.
Yeah,
so
that'll be great.
I'm sorry that I'll have to miss it. But
what was it like to work with him?
Fabulous. He was so much fun. Now, he never rehearsed. He was never there. We would rehearse all week.
It's interesting. That's true, because he actually told the producers when they were formulating the show.
Yes.
Because he was coming right out of movies doing this, and he really didn't want to do TV.
He didn't want to do it at all.
He said, I'll do it, but I'm not rehearsing for him. So everything was spontaneous.
And everything was staged just for him. All week long, we worked just around how we were going to maneuver Dean. Never learned a new song. He always did a song that he knew. and then we knew all the dance routines and everything. And it would be up to us to move him around. But he was great. And he could read cue cards better than anybody on the planet.
Wow.
And of course, the fun of it was when he did make a mistake, the audience loved it. And he always he always had, like, he had had a few drinks, which he had not.
It was always apple juice, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. My goodness.
Mm-hmm. I saw a very fascinating retro kind of piece on the internet. I think it was on YouTube. And I accidentally came upon it. Fascinating of his life and his marriages and his children.
Yeah.
And you know, the difficulties and the ups and downs of his career. It was it was that. And
yes,
his relationship with Jerry Lewis.
Right.
Wow.
And they're in the midst of doing another documentary on it right now.
It really was. I mean, obviously, with Jerry still around, there's so many things that people had communicated. But
he's 90.
Yeah, 92. Right. Did they say 90? Is he 90 this year?
I think it's 90.
My goodness.
I just saw him on a little clip of something.
Well, I mean, and obviously he's done such great work in so many different venues as well, but it's so strange to look back at them and see how young they were when they started. How can you have any relationship with anybody at that age? You know,
And also to think that after that amazing career they had together, that they, in the future after that, were not friends.
Yeah.
No. No.
But did, I think... patch that up
they
on
did.
The Jerry Lewis telethon,
the
Dean
telethon.
Came on.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Interesting.
They did.
How great.
But I can remember him shooting his show across the hall from our show. It was very tricky.
Oh, that must have been awkward.
Yeah. That was very awkward.
Well, obviously, Dean Martin's voice has carried through the generations. While I was doing research the other day, I always turn on Pandora, and That's Amore came on, and my two little ones were sitting there saying, when the moon hits you, I like a big pizza pie. It's so funny to hear them and know that they love that song. I think they mostly love it because it says pizza pie, which they think is an actual pie,
right.
I'm sure. But
first song
but it is. It's funny to see how that tune and the inspiration that he had when he was singing that carries on to even kids today. So
yes, it does. It's true.
What
My
a
goodness.
Life you have had, Susie. And
it's not over yet, right?
No,
we're still,
still
more to do.
Okay,
thank you.
Is this a surprise?
I thought we had a breaking news announcement. I got to tell you, when I was looking over the Gold Diggers, that's obvious, and I think you can find it on YouTube still. I think there's still some clips out there. But the Gold Diggers ran for how long before Dean Martin took over with that show? Were they simultaneous?
No,
Dean's show was first.
Okay.
We became a summer replacement show for Dean.
Of course.
In 1968.
Ugh.
And then we continued to do summer replacement shows, but then they also put us on as regulars on his show.
My goodness.
Was Lee Hale, the producer of Dean's show, involved with the Gold Diggers show as well?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Lee is the one that came up with, he created the Gold Diggers.
Right.
He said, I think it's a great idea to do a summer replacement show called The Gold Diggers, based on the old Busby Berkeley Gold Diggers of the 30s.
Ugh.
And that's how we started. And when we first started, we only did 30s music. And then, of course, it evolved, and then we did really modern 70s music.
But. Well, I've met Lee before, and I just interviewed him recently at the Professional Dancers Society luncheon at the Beverly Hilton, and what a sweet, kind
man
this guy is.
Yes.
Really.
We gave him an award this year.
Yes.
And I was blessed to be able to be the one that introduced
him. Lovely. And you also, Rhonda, you're sort of the ringleader for these girls, aren't you, for the Gold Diggers? You get them all together?
The ringleader. My goodness.
They might not say that, but yeah. But my girlfriend, Wanda, who is, you know, dearest Wanda Bailey, my dear friend, who's a Gold Digger, she always says that. So thank you, Juan.
Well, it's funny, too, because when I was doing this research on this, I hadn't realized during that time how important the musical variety show was. And we were talking just briefly before we came on air about the idea of the summer replacement show, because you never knew when they were going to make the call and be like, hey, we need something else in this time slot. Mm-hmm. That must have been a fascinating time to be involved in Hollywood.
It was. It was wonderful, but they shot it so fast.
Right.
I mean, we'd have 16 production numbers to learn in a week.
Wow. 16?
16.
Between your own series and the Dean Martin
show? Well, no. Dean was off when we were doing our series. We were the summer. But the schedule was just incredible.
Rapid fire.
And with your work with LA's Next Great Stage Star, and, of course, with Joe, who we love so much as well.
Joe Diamalva, if you're listening.
That's right. One of our favorites. It must be great.
We're
going to
talk about you when we get off the air, too.
Yes, we will.
Uh-oh. It must be great to pass some of that experience down, because there's no other way they could have a heritage to that without somebody doing it.
It is so much fun to do that. And they're all, what I love and what's so refreshing to me is those kids are so receptive and so wonderful and respectful of our past.
Yeah.
You know, and they glean from it, you know, and that makes me feel really happy because I love that.
Well, you made a lot of people smile and laugh during that show, so.
It's come to that time.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Terrifying moment.
Did you alert our guests to this?
I did
not.
We're going to surprise these two. I always go out and talk briefly to our guests, and most of the time I'm just looking to see how much I'm going to have to talk during the show to keep them going. And with these two, it was very clear that I didn't have to say a word.
All right.
I could handle the show.
Chatty Cathy's one and two. I learned it from her. It's her fault.
That's true. I get blamed for everything.
So what we want to ask of you is to share with us in our audience one of your most, we all have them, so most embarrassing moment, one of your most embarrassing moments in live performance, be it on the stage or shooting a television show or making a movie. And it can be anything. It can be sad. It can be happy. It can be serious. It can be anything you want it to be.
Extra points for nudity, of course.
Yes, oh yes.
Well, you know, Michael, I'm remembering.
She's got one of those.
I have that story. I think I did tell you this story, but it was so long ago, your listeners probably don't remember.
tell us again.
Well, we were shooting The Gold Diggers in London. Dean presents The Gold Diggers in London in 1970. And I had a sketch with Marty Feldman, who at the time no one in America knew who he was. We brought him over. And he was a wild man. And that sketch, it was like we were at a casino and he was betting, and we were rich and I had on furs and diamonds and gown and the whole thing. Well, long story short, when he lost the money, he kept betting, taking things off of me, jewelry and whatever, to bet. And I had a breakaway dress that if you grabbed the brooch and pulled, the dress would break away to a slip. And then he would pick me up and put me on the table. That was the last bit. Well, they told him, now, Marty, do not grab up at the shoulder. Grab the brooch. Of course. Live studio audience. Down to the waist, stripped. So,
my goodness. Yes.
So I went running off screaming and crying and saying, I will never work with that man again. Of course I did.
Oh, my
pretty
goodness.
Embarrassing.
Ah, I guess so. Wow. Well, the audience got a treat.
Is there tape of this anywhere? Thank goodness for no cell phones, right?
Thank goodness for no cell phones.
Blake MacGyver.
All right. I was going through so many in my head. There were so many like mishaps that happened during my year and a half in Ragtime when we opened it here.
And who were you playing there? What character?
I was the little boy.
At the Schubert Theater.
At the Schubert, the R.I.P.
Yes.
But I'm actually going to tell a different one because I wanted to tell one that involves my mother. Speaking of Beverly Hilton, I was doing an event there with the recording group that I was a part of. Lou Adler's put this group together after the L.A. riots of very diverse gospel choir. And we were doing a concert for a big charity event at the Beverly Hilton, totally like ritzy, packed. And it was one of those days where I was just like being a kid for a minute and like just kind of horsing around backstage and kind of making a fool of myself with the other kids. And my mom was like, if you're going to act like that, like it's going to affect your performance. Like you, like I'm not going to tell you to stop doing it, but just know like this is not how to prep for a show. And you know that. And like, so didn't tell me I had to, just so of course I was like, sure, mom, whatever. And kept horsing around. Well, I get on stage, packed crowd, and it's my solo, my big solo song. And like, I go up on the words, like
oh, no.
In the bridge, like just go up on the thing. Like, sure enough, mom was right. But what I did, I was such a little jerk.
He was so smart.
What I did is instead of just like blanking, I kept mouthing nothing, you know, like watermelon, whatever, and just pretended like my mic went out.
Oh, really? Oh, what a scam artist.
And
my goodness.
As soon as I found where I was in the song, I just picked it back up and went, oh. Such a jerk.
You threw some tech person under the bus.
10 years old. What a disaster.
Oh, that's a great one. Well, we've had some good ones on this show. Nice save. That's impressive. That's impressive.
I can't believe we have gone through this hour already.
That's right. That's right.
But thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure. Thank you.
Wonderful success with this weekend's shows.
Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know where to go. We've told you, the Cavern Club Theater.
Blake Sings Barbara, the concert is the name of the show, and tickets are $20. You can't beat that in this town. So just visit
brownpapertickets.com.
That's right. Blake Sings Barbara on Brown Paper Tickets, and obviously Jersey Boys at the Amundsen and Lucky Stiff at the Actors Co-op. Actors Co-op always does such great work. Lots of great shows to go see, yeah?
Yes, indeed. So we wish you also great
Thank
success,
you.
Susie, on your trip coming up to Atlanta.
Safe travels.
Give Bert our best.
Okay, I will.
Michael, it is always a pleasure to sit across from you for an hour.
I can say the same about you, sir.
Where will I see you next week?
On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.